Recorded live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
This is Greg Burgess with Allegion, and I give you the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal they wear galvanized underpants. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Hey, this is Greg from Allegion, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
I'm talking a monster guitar player, Mr. Greg Burgess from Allegion. Greg, welcome to the Genghis and Ragman Show.
Thanks, man. I'm putting everything on monster.com from now on after this interview. Everything. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't want a job. I'm just on there.
Well, hey, man, thanks for coming on the show, man. We're big fans. Actually, Genghis got me into you guys a couple years ago. I think it's when you guys did the cover of Subdivisions. He said, dude, do you know who Allegion is? I said, no. He goes, check out this Rush cover. It's fucking amazing. And I was like, you ain't shitting. This is fucking amazing. It's awesome, man.
Dude, it was so strange when we were doing that. I'm just like, oh, dude, we're going to get so crucified. Like, Rush fans are pretty unforgiving. And we were just like, oh, this is going to go horrible. But you know what? We love it. We'll do it anyway, you know. Rush gave us their blessing, so I was like, cool. I love it. Yeah.
Did you get any feedback from the guys in Rush with your cover?
From their management, we sure did. And it was all good stuff. So, yeah.
So that's when you said, okay, let's do Anime. another great cover, dude.
Actually, the story behind that is I couldn't choose which song to do, Subdivisions or Anime, so we did them both. And then Subdivisions was just supposed to be a bonus track for Japan. And Animate was just supposed to be a bonus track for Europe. And basically what happened is Japan was like, we don't want the record. And Metal Blade's like, dude, just put it on the record. It's awesome. And we were just like, but, well, if you're happy, we're happy. So sure. And then Animate just kind of like got shelved until everybody started asking what we were doing for January 16th, 2018 for 1.618 for our big song, like our biggest, you know, hit in death metal. What does that even mean? But yeah, for our most, you know, popular song, what are we going to do for it? So I was like, oh, well, let's put out Animate as like, you know, something. And Metal Blade was cool with it. So yeah.
That's great, because that's one of our favorite albums from Rush, man. When that was sort of their comeback album. We're still blown away by that record.
By Counterparts?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, dude, I love that album. Okay. It's such a good record. And everybody was like, I've never heard of this song. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess you're not a Rush fan. You know, Moving exactly. Pictures, yeah? Yeah? Okay. If it's not Spirit of the Radio and it's not off of Moving Pictures, apparently it doesn't matter to you.
I gotta say, I mean, just we'll gut off Rush here in a second, but yeah, Genghis and I talk about Rush all the time. I have to say, I mean, Test for Echo was really good, but yeah. Counterparts to me was the last just truly great Rush record. Test for Echo right behind it, but yeah. Counterparts for me, I was like, holy shit, man, they were back, and then Test for Echo, they kind of started moving a little bit into another direction, not quite as heavy as what Counterparts was. I wish they would have stayed as heavy as Counterparts for a while.
Yeah, I think the producer really had a hand in Counterparts. And I guess, like, I mean, I think, was it... It might have been Rush Beyond the Lighted Stage, they were saying when they did that. Like, Alex Lyson's like, I want, like, something on my guitar. And the producer's like, no! You sound like shit with that on! We're not doing it! And he just, like, fought the band, and the album sounds amazing. And I'm just like, ah, see, this is why you hire those guys. Because exactly. Sometimes they know better than the band themselves. As our producer does all the time. So, there's that.
Well, your brand new record just came out, Apoptosis. Before we jump into that, can you tell us kind of the main differences or what might be different from the last one, Proponent for Senate?
Yeah, dude, we love naming everything, including our band, after things that no one can say.
Exactly. So,
I it's one of my favorite things about going into these interviews. I'm like, all right, I get to just like have fun with the interviewees or the interviewers on the how are they going to pronounce anything that I'm involved in. Yeah, but you got Apoptosis is great, but I love the British Apoptosis. I just think it's a little bit.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, for Proponent for Sentience, I was like, we were on this kind of like, you know, I really love classical and orchestral music, and we kind of just went full bore with that. I, you know, that's kind of how I feel about it on for Proponent for Sentience. And with, you know, it's a huge concept record. There's like, you know, the three movements of the sonata, and, you know, it's all heavily orchestrated and stuff. And going into this one, we knew we couldn't really do the orchestral thing again on that level, just because it would be hard to top ourselves in that area. So we kind of had to like turn the boat a little bit and try to do something a little different. So I would say this album's a little bit more meat and potatoes. It's more based on like the band being a metal band instead of being like kind of, I don't know. I feel like our focus is more narrow on this record, and I think that mainly stems from just the amount of time we had to write it. Because, you know, I mean, just the intro of Proponent for Sentience 1 took us a year. We counted the hours. The hours invested in just the orchestral intro alone, between me and my writing partner Joe Ferris, who does a lot of the orchestral stuff. Like he clocked it on his computer, and it turned out to be spent like about a year in hours doing that. track. So, yeah, we just didn't have the luxury of that time. So it was just kind of like, you know, very raw Apoptosis. Is just like kind of, you know, this is the band just being the band without a lot of, like, bells and whistles. Or, you know, so it's very straightforward. So that would be my answer. What is stripped down, raw?
It sounds great, and I love too that you get to do more of that classical guitar work that you've been doing. I think since the first album, right? You just seem to be more. I don't know. It's like it's become more not center stage, obviously, but rather. I don't know. Are they just more open to it now, and you get to kind of do more of what you like, or how has that sort of come together?
No, actually, really, it has stemmed from awareness of just the music business side of things, which sounds funny, but really, it came to, like, we'd be touring with some bands, and they were just, like, way bigger than we are, and we weren't sure why, and it wasn't that those bands were bad by any means, because they weren't, they were great, but we just weren't sure, like, why are they so much bigger than us? And it really came down to is, like, we just, you know, broke down what their bands are, and, you know, they have unique selling positions, and really kind of was one of the things that made Allegion unique was my classical guitar background. So I just was like, you know, I should just, like, milk this and see, you know, if it would open some doors for us, or at least make us stand out a little bit from the pack. So that, I mean, I didn't really discuss that with any of the dudes, like, but I kept that in the back of my mind, like, you know what, I can really use this interest of mine and my background to, if I put a little bit more focus on that, then hopefully I can propel the band a little further, which is kind of what my thought process was. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I think with Grey Matter Mechanics off the last record, I incorporated it more into the song, and then Apoptosis, what I did instead of incorporating it into the, like, into the metal music, I just wrote more. So, like, I had that classical duet, and on the vinyl, I have a solo that got cut from the CD, obviously, which was not a bad decision. As much as I love my music, it was just too different. And, like, I had, like, the best intentions with everything. It just was, I came at it from the wrong direction, and it was, like, a good learning process. And I'm glad it got cut from the record. For what most people get and what's on Spotify, it'll come out later, like, attached to the end of the record, which is fine, because it'll be like, yeah, here's a bonus track or whatever, and that'll help the album flow a little better, because before, kind of like, it was right in the middle, it was kind of like a ballad thing, it kind of derailed the whole, you know, metal thing, and yeah. So, you know, creative missteps that you know, we solved before the album came out, but not in time for the vinyl pressing, I guess.
Do you ever get to pull that out live, or how does the crowd take to that?
I mean, we don't really have a lot of time when we're playing. You know, it's like usually we've been, like, in a perpetual cycle of doing supporting slots, which means we're getting 30 minutes, you know, 45 minutes. So it's really just like, you know, we're here to, like, rock out. We need to rock out. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and that's why we stopped playing the Rush live, actually, because we played the Rush live on a few tours, and people didn't we're doing this full out, like, death metal type show, and they were like, all right, classic rock time, and it was like people loved it, but at the same time that, like, the energy of our show just collapsed, and then it was hard to get it back, so we just kind of yanked the Rush from our live performance from now on, because it really kind of just killed the mood. So,
yeah, actually, I saw a band recently, and kind of a higher energy type band. I don't know if you're familiar with Falling in Reverse, and they can get really heavy, they can be a little poppy, and they did this kind of this, like, ballady thing. He's like, God has fucking killed everything we just accomplished tonight. That's out of the set.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things. It doesn't mean the song's bad or anything like that. It just is like, there's a momentum and how you program, your performance. And sometimes, the wrong song in the wrong place can totally just, screw you. So, and that was, just one of those pieces, it just doesn't work. If we did, a whole set like that, it'd be phenomenal. You know what I mean? But, when you're doing this high-energy set and then you put kind of, a classic rock song in there, it just doesn't work.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, let's jump into the record, and I want to compliment you. Man, your guitar player is just amazing. And what you and Michael are doing, trading off, doing the harmonies. I want to bring up the video, or it's kind of like a guitar video for Exothermic Chemical Combustion. Dude, it's what you guys are trading off, and then you're doing the harmonies. It's just simply amazing, dude.
That song sucks to play. I'm super proud of that song. It's one of my favorite on the record, but yeah, man, it's rough. It's rough. I remember I was in New York with our vocalist doing a press tour, and then my phone blows up because as soon as I get back, we have to shoot that video, and it was literally Mike going, "How the hell do you play this?" I'm like, "Dude, lots of hammer-ons and pull-offs. Don't try to pick that. You will kill yourself. It's stupid." So, yeah, even we're struggling with it a bunch. I can't wait to play it live. It's gonna be one of those that it'll go over well live, but it's gonna take us about 2 years before we can just play it on autopilot. You know what I mean? It's gonna be one of those ones that you dread playing in the set every night.
Well, I mean, there can't, for something like that, especially with the harmony stuff, you can't really improvise at all. I know there's some guitar players that say they never play the same solo twice, but with the type of music you guys do, you almost kind of have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love that type of music where they can just kind of improvise. In our genre, that doesn't really fly. People want to hear what's on the record, every once in a while you can change a solo here and there keeping the same spirit or doing something a little different, which is, can be awesome in a live because it gives the audience something different. But a lot of times, especially for something like that, people are really attached to what's on the record. So you kind of have to play it, verbatim, which in a way is great because you spend so much time critically writing it that you don't want to really change it all that much, if that makes sense.
That does. I want to ask you too, speaking of that, the crowds and how they receive you and what they expect, I'm kind of curious, before we go any further into this album, how does Colorado put out a band like a Legion, man? I never thought of it as a huge metal sort of a place, but especially y'all's kind of metal.
I mean, there's a lot of amazing bands from Colorado, like just in metal. Havoc, you know.
I love Havoc.
Like, literally, they live right down the street.
Oh, sweet.
You know, I guess the originators of metal here were kind of like Cephalic Carnage, which they should have a new record coming out either this year or next. I know they're close to finishing it right now. Close to finish writing it, that is. But and we have like some really, we have a vast variety. I mean, here I know Chemist is pretty big in the doom scene. I know that we have Primitive Man, which is like, oh man, like grindy, you know, full of like kind of like Full of Hell, just like they're just, it's just abrasive as hell. Very cool stuff. Very different from anything that you know Allegion is, but they're, you know, they're successful at what they do. You know, it's really cool. We have a new up and coming band called Tethys. I believe they may have gotten signed. I'm not really sure about them. I think they just got signed. We'll have to see. But yeah, and they're killing it. Colorado's got a lot of great metal bands. So
that's awesome, man. Well, yeah. I want to just about the writing process between you and Michael when you're splitting up solos. Yeah, how does that work within the band? I guess as far as maybe the song structure and then the instrumentation of what you and Michael are doing.
Yeah, so I mean, the general kind of like rule we have is we just split the song up. We're contracted by Metal Blade for 10 songs a record, so we just split that up evenly. So he does 5, I do 5, but we always try to write more. I think the CD version of Apoptosis has 11 songs on it. 6 of those are mine and 5 of them are Mike's, and then we had 2 other tracks that are on the vinyl that were mine. And that's really just how the writing goes. It's kind of like, well, this song has to go on the record, or this song has to go on record, and I like all of these, so this is my half of the record, so to speak. And then, you know, I think I really, the only reason I have 6 on Apoptosis is because we cut a couple songs in 2 and made them 2 tracks. So the opening track, the first 2 tracks on the album, they were written as 1 song, and then we just split them up for, you know, just for the ease of navigation around the record. So, and then as far as solos go, I can't really speak for Mike. I can speak for me. A lot of it is what rhythm I would prefer to solo over. I know that I try to make solo rhythms have multiple parts, so that when you're writing a solo, the solo can develop over 2 contrasting sections. I've started really liking playing over key changes, because then you can slip and slide out of the original key into a new one, and then you're off in a, you know, just the evolution of a solo. I know playing solos for solo's sake is kind of silly, like they need to benefit the song. So doing cool musical things like, you know, modulating in the middle of something to move it to a new key really will change the sound, like the feel of a song. So I'm getting to be a big fan of that, and just like learning new techniques, you know, through guitar lessons, actually, taking jazz lessons and learning some jazz theory and how to like do that has really influenced the writing process and how I approach solos as well. So I don't know. Did I answer your question, or did I just ramble for like
15 minutes? Oh, no.
Okay. Dude, sometimes I need breadcrumbs. I just start talking and I'm like, I have no idea how I got here.
Well, your music's so interesting because it's so brutal at times. I mean, you got the progressive side, you got the melodic death. I almost hear, I wouldn't say really black metal-ish, but I mean, some of the orchestrations, I guess, of what you're doing a little bit kind of makes me think about that a little bit. And then you get really melodic. And that's what's so cool. There's so many things going on within the song. You kind of don't always know where it's going to go, which for me as a listener, I love that kind of stuff, man. I don't like just the cookie cutter stuff. I like to hear a lot of stuff going on, and then it, you know, crescendos into a, you know, a real good melodic type solo and stuff like you guys do. So I really like the way you guys structure songs.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, you know, there, you know, we definitely, we like black metal, you know what I mean? And so we try to put, you know, at least some black metal elements, you know, here and there in when it fits, you know? If the mood capture, it needs to be captured in kind of a, like, I don't want to say cold, a frostbitten way, then yeah, you know, it might call for, you know, putting a black metal section in. And we love lots of genres of metal, you know, and lots of genres apart from metal, obviously, but we like to incorporate a lot of things, especially if it's, you know, and I know djent is becoming a big thing. So here and there, you know, I might put in a riff that's a little bit more djent-y just to try to capture people that, you know, that might like that stuff, you know, and it's not forcing it, you know, it has to fit the song, but, you know, we're not afraid to try to put new stuff in to try to like appeal to other people, as long as it doesn't hurt, you know, what we're trying to do, I guess. So yeah, I mean, you take your writing as a culmination of your influences, so they all kind of like appear at some point or another.
I think that's great. That's like that might speak to over the long haul, over the years, your longevity. You may end up perhaps having a longer career just because of your willingness to sort of incorporate different things, your openness to that kind of music with the classical and the jazz. I mean, I know that, for instance, Alex Skolnick from Testament, he does the jazz thing. I saw him recently with his jazz band, and I think that a lot of those guys, I guess it feels like it opens them up creatively to sort of explore other kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, and it, I don't know, like, we encourage all our members to have side projects. That hasn't actually been said, I mean, really often, but I'll just say it now. I love it when my dudes have side projects. You know, I play in a couple different bands. I mean, Michael, you know, he's been in a couple different projects. Riley does a couple different. Boo Boo, he's playing in, like, you know, he makes a lot of his money playing in, like, wedding bands and, like, cover bands and shit. Bark, I mean, he kind of is like a drummer for hire. I mean, like, he was out with the Agony Scene. actually, when we were filming a lot of the promotional material for Apoptosis, he wasn't in any of it because he was on tour, and everybody's like, what's going on with Park? I'm like, he's just busy. He wasn't here. He's still in the band, I swear. Yeah, I mean, it's what that does is just like lets your dudes be creative, and then I feel like when they come back to Allegion, they're happier. You know what I mean? They get to, they've got to express themselves in many different ways so that they feel fulfilled enough that they don't feel boxed in by what we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great attitude.
Well, I want to bring up another track on the record, Tsunami and Submergence. Do you have a cool story about how that song came together for y'all?
Thank you.
This is going to be a long story, but in 2008, we put out our EP before we got signed, and on that album, there is a track called Next of Terra, and that deals with it's just kind of about like Chernobyl. It's very much like what happened to Japan when the tidal wave hit the nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Right. And that just kind of like spiraled into every record we put a natural disaster on our records, even though that wasn't really a natural one. The spark that ignited this. So basically what's happened over the course of our career, we have come up with a huge concept record where we put out one song or two songs per record that will lead to this whole story arc that's basically like the butterfly effect. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. Tsunami and Submergence is just the latest installment of that. And we put them we've released them completely out of order. They're not released in any order that would make sense to anybody. So that when we want to do a live DVD where we play them all in order and have the story played out on a screen behind us.
Oh, awesome.
So it's like a very epic, career spanning concept. It's kind of, I don't know. It'll be a lot of fun when it all comes together. But so that's really, this just deals obviously with the tsunami portion of the natural disaster, chapter. And, a lot of what's going on in this music is I'm trying to, what I do with all the natural disaster pieces, I try to use the music, I kind of write it in a very classical frame of mind, is that I want the music to kind of represent like a visual or a feeling. So like, for instance, when we did on Elements of the Infinite, we did God, what's the name of the song? Through Ages of Ice. So in that song, one guitar part was trying to, there's like kind of like a black metal guitar part that tried to instill the feeling of cold. And then the other guitar part is trying to instill the feeling of like a barren landscape. And the bass is just playing like bump, 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 and it's trying to make the heartbeat. So like put all those together and you had kind of like you're cold, you're staring at this landscape, and your heart is like going out of your chest. That's not really a common writing technique in metal, but for the writing of this thing I tried to do that. So the odd time signatures and kind of the way that it flows to me was kind of like the pushing and pulling of waves. That's what I was trying to capture in the guitar parts. And then it's a slow build. So with a tsunami, like the water gets sucked out to sea. So it's kind of like a very, very slow build as the water just is getting sucked out. And then at the very end, all hell breaks loose and the wave is crashing into the land. So, wow. Yeah. And I got some awesome surprises for when we play it live and the whole thing. I have it planned out in the most theatrical music theater-like way.
Sweet.
Hopefully the budget will be there to do it. It's probably not. But it would be amazing how it is in my head. It's fucking amazing.
That's awesome. Well, have you ever heard of Wolfheart? They're from Finland, kind of a death metal type band.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. My best friend has been like on tour with them. She loves that band so much that she has like literally just been on tour with them because I think they're in the States now with like Bodom, right?
Yeah.
She's just been following them around and hanging out with them. Yeah, crazy.
Well, I recently interviewed them and they had termed the. They call themselves winter metal. So I was saying you might could put that in your repertoire
winter
when
metal.
People are asking you. Yeah, exactly. So the last song I want to bring up, and it's actually, I guess, a two-parter, and I think you might have mentioned this a little bit earlier, was Extremophiles. You have part A and part B. You guys did a really cool video for Part B. Can you kind of tell us about those two songs?
Was written by Michael Stanzel. It was one of the first. It was actually the first song we ever played live from the record. Just because that verse guitar part so radical, I was like, I want to play this. So we debuted it like last year, like way before the record came out. We were just like, I just really wanted to play it because I thought the guitar part was so fun. I don't really know what to tell you about that musically. I mean, it's just fun. It's a cool song. I know Riley put some like slam type vocals on it. And that was just, you know, he has a lot of techniques at his disposal. And when the music just, you know, his natural place for his voice is kind of low. And then when the guitar dipped down even lower, he just kind of had to go with it to match it. And it was just turned into like slam vocals, which is definitely, I mean, if metal music is an acquired taste, slam vocals are going to be an even smaller acquired taste within the acquired taste. I think it's rad, but it's a lot of people were like, what the hell? So very different for us. But I was like, I don't know, like, try new things. What do you want? For A, the music was actually left over from Proponent for Sentience. I just couldn't finish it. I couldn't really figure out how to end the song. And that was... It took me a long time to finish the song because I just didn't know how to do it. But that one's actually based on a violin piece by Max Richter called November. And I heard that piece. Me and Michael were driving out to NAMM. And it was just a really awesome piece. I love it, haunting, and just this violin going on and it keeps growing. And I wanted to do that. Type of thing within the Legion. So, I mean, that's the real story with that. As for like lyrical content, Riley can explain this way better, of course, but extremophiles are organisms that can exist in very extreme conditions. So, I mean, I think there's some ones that can exist in space. There's some animals that will just basically go into hibernation. So it's dead, and as soon as it warms up, they'll, like, you know, come back to life, and that's really what they're about. With the A and B, I think it's based on two different species of extremophiles, and why they're out of order on the record is a mystery. Why didn't we just make BA and AB? I don't know. But then again, it got people curious, so we are having this conversation. So, nice. not a good answer, but it does get people to think, why the hell do they do this? I don't know.
Well, I read something, and I was kind of curious because I think this is kind of a growing trend with bands and the way the culture is, and you don't have the big record contracts like they did back in the day, and there's more crowdfunding type stuff going on for bands. Actually, I interviewed a band a while back called Percipium Est, and they did a crowdfunding thing to be able to tour in the States. I noticed that you guys had done something with Patreon, and I think that was basically to kind of keep the band going. And I didn't know if y'all were still involved with that, because I've heard there's been some controversy over the last several months. I know Last in Line with Vinny Appice, we interviewed him, and he was pretty sour on, I guess, the GoFundMe type thing they did. But I guess my question is, are you guys, did that service kind of help you guys? And for bringing like a bigger production for some of the stuff you want to do live, would you, work with a Patreon to try to get a little bit of funding to be able to do this big theatrical performance?
Well, so our Patreon is ongoing. So our Patreon, it basically, and we explained this horribly. So when we launched our Patreon, we were one of the first bands. I think we were the second metal band ever to do it. And so we got dragged through the shit. pretty bad. However, I will say that the way that we explained it was very short-sighted, and a lot of the shit that we got dragged through was of our own making, and we should have done some. We should have explained ourselves a little bit different, because a lot of people got the wrong idea. And so basically, the reason we did it was we were in a lot of debt. We just like a string of bad luck, and we couldn't get a bank loan to bail us out. So we were in danger of losing members, and the band was in danger of ceasing to be as a touring entity, which this is actually more accurate than I think we've ever said. So the band wasn't like gonna stop. It's not like I have any other skills. I'm always gonna write music, so but we just had gotten our new vocalist. He had lost every job because we were on tour all the time, and like when you're on tour all the time, like the best jobs you can get when you get home is like working at a gas station, right? Or so, some little job like that. Well, there's only so many gas stations in town that will let you, like, hey, I'm going to work for 2 weeks, and then, sorry, I got to go on tour, so I have to quit, right? Eventually, they're going to stop hiring you. So it was really just trying, he couldn't find work. And we shot for the stars with the Patreon, and, like, it's done really well. Like, we still, help him pay his bills, with that. And at first it just went and it cleared all our debt. So like all the bad, like the debt that we had incurred over the years, that got all cleared within the first couple of months. And then
that's
it went,
awesome.
Yeah, it totally saved the band. And then that went to helping him afford to live so that he can continue to be in this band, because we didn't, like, when you just get a member and he has to quit because he just can't afford to be in the band, dude, that's like the worst drag, right? So, sometimes like you just have to figure out a way to do it, right? And unfortunately, in today's music industry, it's the bands are kind of left. You have to figure it out, There's not a lot of no one has the money in the industry to really like help the bands out much anymore, So, and that's not a dig on anybody. That's just the truth of how the industry is. So we just, we had to figure it out, and that was kind of like the only option that we had at that point. And so we did that, and it's totally been awesome. However, I think the whole thing, we should have called it what it, a spade is a spade. And basically what our Patreon is, it's our fan club, right? It's the same thing as, you know, the old Metallica and Megadeth fan clubs. It's just you don't have to, like, write in, you know. You know, every month it's a monthly subscription, and then, you know, you get things in return. That is the ideal way that this should run. So, yeah, I mean, we're still involved in that. But to your question, could that ever help with production? I mean, right now, that just kind of goes to – it covers our expenses so that we're not in danger of losing dudes. So the only way that that could, like, help us with production is if we had a massive influx of new patrons, which, yeah, you know, which we're not going to count on. You know what I mean? Like, the patrons we have are amazing, and they support the band. And I honestly – you know, life is life, and sometimes we're not very good at running our Patreon. I'll be honest, but you know, we have plans to like try to do a lot better. We've totally reorganized the ship, so that should be launching soon. But within that, there's no to like launch another crowdfunding campaign would cry for. I mean, you know, we're incredibly thankful for the one that we have. You know, to do one on top of that would be, I can't foresee. I mean, you know, the one that we have, people think is questionable. Doing another one, you know what, yeah, I mean? I just, like, you know, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. And I think there's at some point, you know, like, it was such a negative experience the first time, which I, you know, which was partially our fault. I think if we just said, hey, we're starting a fan club, and this is, you know, and we didn't have to give so much information on why, you know, we didn't have to give a look behind the curtain, but we're just like honest dudes, but we're also jackasses. So, you know, our fan base know we're kind of jackasses. Look at the 1.618 video. I'm in fucking tights with a cucumber down them. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, we're goofballs. So when we our fans were the ones that were really kind of pushing for it. So, you know, it was our solution, and we did it in Allegiant fashion. However, people that were not Allegiant fans that saw that, they got the wrong end of the stick bag, which like, in hindsight, you can't blame them for that. So they saw, like, two guys that were just like that came off pretty entitled, is what it appeared. And that was not the case at all. You know, they just didn't get our personalities in the way that this band, you know, our images within our fan base. So yeah, completely our bad. But yeah, there's no way to do another one. If that, I've just been rambling.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Especially with the way the climate is for bands and stuff. But Greg, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
You know, I'm incredibly grateful to be able to do this. You know what I mean? So just thanks to everybody that supported us, because if no one cares, then I, you know, there's no way that we can continue to do it. So, you know, just thank you. Yeah. I think you guys, Greg, are having me. Yeah.
Oh, no, not a problem, man. We want to thank you for coming on the show, Greg, and we want to tell all the fans out there to grab Allegiant's brand-new record, Apoptosis, out now on Metal Blade. It's a killer record. And catch them out on tour, man. Good luck on tour, Greg. We hope to catch you here in Houston, man.
Oh, we love Houston. It's always a great time. Let's try to do that sooner than later.
Yeah, man. We'll be Genghis and I will be the old guys up front.
I love the old guys up front. I love the old guys up front.
I'm gonna go. Ragman, and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.